I decided to, as some people remarked, I have these books behind me. I decided to change the place that I usually sit when I'm in front of my computer and talking these last weeks, to have a different perspective, to not be fixed in my usual place, to pull the rug out from under myself just once again, even if it seems like not much, it changes my view, it changes your view, and it fits with what I wanted to talk about tonight. Today someone told me he was supposed to be somewhere this weekend or these days, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. But at the last minute, he decided not to go. He was supposed to go with some friends to someone's country house. And he decided that it wasn't a good idea, that it would be taking risk, because he knew that they would be in a situation where people would not wear their masks. He would have to take the train. They wouldn't be respecting social distancing because they're all friends, and he just decided it was too early to do that. So he decided not to go. And he was really sad about this, and at the same time feeling that it was the right decision, but really sad because he had wanted to go. And he felt like he was the only one of his friends who had this feeling of responsibility and was living up to the rules that we've all been given. At the same time, he felt it was the right decision. And he told me today that he felt free because he wasn't supposed to be where he was today. He was supposed to be somewhere else with his friends. And so he had arranged all of his activities for the next few days with the idea that he would be somewhere else. And so no one would be expecting him to do anything because he was supposed to be away. And he felt really free. And this is something that I have experienced just recently at the beginning in March when we canceled our Portugal retreat. We were supposed to go to Coimbra. And I experienced a similar feeling, and maybe some of you did as well, because I was supposed to have taken an airplane and been in Coimbra for 5 days, had arranged everything for that, so no one was expecting anything of me here in Paris. And then at the last minute we canceled it, and so suddenly I was here and nobody knew I was here and nobody could expect anything from me. I've also had this experience when planes have been canceled or various plans have been disrupted. But today when I heard this person telling me this, it occurred to me that, you know, he was saying how much he appreciated this, having this opportunity. And he felt like he was in a kind of a no man's land. And I thought, you know, that actually life is always like that. We're always in that no man's land, but we don't realize it. We don't, we fix ourselves, we attach to the place where we are and we identify with it. And at the same time, we would like to be somewhere else. We would like to be doing something else. We would like to be with someone else. We would like to be someone else, all the while being identified with where we are. And during this pandemic, some of that has been eliminated for us. We had no choice. What we usually do, where we usually are, who we are usually with, all of that was taken away to varying degrees for all of us. And then some of us, you know, like me, became sick. And then that was a further removal of who I usually am and who what I identify with. I just take my health for granted. I don't even really think about it. Like Bernie Glassman used to say, you never think about your stomach until you have a stomach ache. And then you're very aware of your stomach. But otherwise, you don't really think about your stomach. And I don't really think about the place that I am until I'm shaken out of that place. And all of the restrictions that I have, all of the reference points that I have about that place are taken away, then I'm aware of it. But otherwise, I'm not really aware of it. So today when he told me this story, I thought, this is a really good opportunity for all of us to look into that, to look at leaving behind everything that is familiar. Leaving behind the place, the activities, the people, everything that's familiar, which we've all done, as I said, to some extent. And truly be nowhere. No man's land, as we call it, is literally no man's land. So the place where no man is, it's the land that belongs to no one. And that's actually where we are all the time. But we don't realize that because we think we are somewhere. We think we are someone who is somewhere. And when we take away all those things that we're familiar with, we have this opportunity to just feel what is right now. In America, they call it sheltering in place. In France, we call it confinement, but there they call it sheltering in place. So you're taking refuge. Shelter is to take refuge here, where you are. And you're not moving from there. It's as if the, you know, millions and millions of people throughout the world have done a retreat for 2 months, sheltering in place, not moving from this place. And that place is actually, if we really go into it, you. So you come home to you. You're sheltering in you. And because everything else has been taken away, there's nothing left. There's nothing else. You don't really have a choice. Of course, we fill it up with things. You know, like Debbie said at the beginning, she's sick of looking at her computer screen. I think we all are to a certain extent because we're doing things like this, but we're also doing other things on the computer. You know, we're watching series on Netflix and we're emailing and we're reading, surfing the internet, reading all kinds of things, which has been a wonderful opportunity. At the same time, it's taking us away from ourselves. So how do we return to ourselves? We do it with our sitting practice. That's what our sitting practice is about, is coming home to you. Taking that step back, looking inside, seeing what's there. And what's there is different according to the moment. So when I was sick in my bed, there were things going on that aren't going on now. Today, when I was in my room, I looked out the window and I had this moment of nostalgia for those days being sick in bed. And for the children who were playing in the garage lot next door, they're not playing there anymore. I guess they went back to school. I don't know. Or they can go out now, and so they're playing somewhere else. They haven't been there for a long time. But it seemed like I had become even attached to those points of reference. Although I was in a deep state of no reference points, of not knowing, of ultimate vulnerability and humility. And yet, I managed to attach to things. And I saw that today. And I said, change your place. Change your place. And so I sat outside. I changed the place where I sat outside to do my writing. I've been doing a lot of writing. And instead of sitting at my desk, I went and sat at the table in the garden. Tonight, I switched this place, changed my place. Change. It's been done for us in this pandemic situation, but we can also do it for ourselves. Life does it for us. Life is uncertain, life is impermanent. Can we just feel that uncertainty and that impermanence and not feed it? Usually we feed our discomfort with that, our fear. But can we just feel it? Just feel the fear, feel the anxiety, feel the doubt, and not feed it. So I just felt the nostalgia I was feeling this afternoon without feeding it. Just acknowledging it and then moving on to something else. When I thought of this term, coming home to yourself, which is what all of our koans point to, which is what all of the teachings point to. When you come home to yourself, you ultimately find love as well. When I think of this, coming home to yourself, I have a very personal relationship with that, which some of you have heard this story before, which really doesn't mean much unless you're American. But in American high schools, they have these, you know, what they call prom queens or homecoming queens, which all of the students elect someone who is then the queen, who is the favorite girl of the school when you're in high school. And they call it homecoming because it's a moment when all the former students come back and there's a big party and there's a big football match and it's a big event and a big dance and the queen is crowned. So they call it the homecoming queen. And so when I was in my last year of high school, I was elected the homecoming queen, to my great surprise, because I didn't know why. I thought, what? That's not me. I didn't know who I was, but I thought, that's not me. And I didn't fit any of the usual stereotypes. It's usually, you know, kind of the pom-pom girl who is dating the football star and that kind of thing. And I didn't fit that at all. And I was always mystified by that. By this, what happened. And for years and years and years, years and years and years and years and years, I would come back to it and think, what? That's not me, you know? Of course, this wasn't something that really occupied my thoughts, but occasionally it would come back, that memory of, that's not me. They don't know who I am. Why did they elect me that? I left America, I left home, I came to Europe, lived all kinds of experiences, settled in Paris, you know, whatever, started my Zen practice, and suddenly I started my Zen practice because I had a strong experience of coming home to myself. And at one moment, suddenly it became clear to me, now I was the homecoming queen. I had come home to myself. That's what the queen was. We're all homecoming kings and queens. We just have to make that come home to yourself. Of course, my friends in high school didn't elect that, didn't know any of this. But not so long ago, when I told some of them this story, when I was home visiting, one of them said, well, you know, that's why we elected you, because you were already like that. Well, I didn't feel that I was already like that, but that's what they told me. I'm not sure if it's true. In any case, my mission in life, I realized, was coming home to myself and helping other people to come home to themselves. And so, you know, decades later, I finally lived up to the title of homecoming queen, because that's what I do. I come home to myself moment to moment, and I help other people come home to themselves. And the perplexing thing is that in order to come home from yourself, to yourself, you have to go away. You have to leave everything behind that's familiar. You have to leave what you know. You have to change your position, change your fixed identities, let go of them. Otherwise, you can't really come home to yourself, because it's some other identity that you're with. You have to go to that no man's land. That nowhere. And it's, you know, if we had a Christian term, it's the promised land. You know, it really is. And it's you, it's in you, you are it. So it's not like you have to go somewhere else. I like that term, sheltering in place, actually. You know, it's not, because to stay in place means to not move. So it's like we have this term in Zen, dwelling in non-dwelling. So you stay, you dwell in non-dwelling, which is in not being stuck. So we're sheltering in place in this place that's moving all the time. Because you are moving all the time. You are never the same person. You're not the same person as when you sat down when you turned on your computer tonight. You're not the same person who started listening to this talk. Neither am I. I'm changing all the time. You know, science tells us this. Cells in our body are born and dying all the time. We see that we age. We see pictures of ourselves even a year or two ago, and we think, wow, I looked younger then. Even if it's just a tiny bit, you know. But we do. Everything changes. You know, we have koans about this. You know, there's a monk who arrives and says to the teacher, you know, I've just arrived, please teach me or something. And the teacher said, where have you been? And she says, oh, I've been here, here, and there. And the teacher says, oh, you know, you stupid idiot, wandering around like that. The point is that we spend our lives doing that. You know, we spend our lives wandering around, wanting to be somewhere else, going somewhere else, getting something else. Thinking that something else will do it. Something else will bring us home to ourselves. Well, the good news and the bad news is that it won't. Nothing outside of you will bring you home. And there's no home outside of yourself either. And can we be really home nowhere? Which means being home everywhere, actually. So, anyone comments or questions about that? Does that resonate or not? You can also ask questions about something else. We don't have to just stay on this topic. Or tell us how your sheltering at home is going and how you feel about it.
Roshi?
Yes.
This experience of confinement was not hasn't been especially difficult for me. It never in the sense of in the aspect of making me being more with myself. And I have been finding it difficult when communicating with other people, friends. I seem to see a lot in some of them. They express the this desire for different experiences, which to me they always sound like looking for distractions, basically. That's what I seem to see in what they express. That they feel like doing, that they want to do, and that they are not able to do, and now gradually they will be able to do. And lately I've been finding it a bit hard to, because that's a legitimate feeling, because if that's what they feel that they want to do, or that they need, that's fine. I'm okay with that. I just never seem able to shake the feeling that there's always an aspect of seems like they're running away. Of course, I'm talking about people. I'm just thinking about people who don't have any sort of practice. I've been aware of that.
And when you I heard echo. So when you recognize this, what you say is distraction. We recognize things because we also, it's something that we know in ourselves as well. Maybe not in the same way, not in the same situation, but we know what it is to want to be distracted. And so, do you know why that is? Why you would want to be distracted? You know, you maybe have some other moment when you look for distraction.
Yes, I do. Sometimes. I don't know. Even this morning, I felt fortunately, I was able to ask myself the question, what am I cultivating? I don't know what I was. I was watching TV. I got before just coming and sitting to work. I was having breakfast, and suddenly the question came to me, like Joa spoke about last week. Suddenly, the question came to me: what am I cultivating? Right, I have to be work. It's like 9:30. I don't need to be sitting here in front of the TV. At this time of day, I really have a lot of work to do. So,
So do you have any idea why you would choose the distraction rather than the work? I don't know.
I think many times it's not. It's not very clear, actually. I don't know. Maybe I should investigate it more. Maybe I should look closer at those moments. What am I running away from something, or what it might be? I tend to look at laziness, but it doesn't seem to quite fit the thing. Just like, seems too loose an idea, just lazy, feeling lazy. It's not
as you note it can be complex what the given situation, what's happening, but ultimately it's about not being present to what is. You know, it's choosing to drift or turn away from what is, or what needs to be done, or the response to the situation, and usually it's around something uncomfortable. So we don't want to really feel the uncertainty, so we binge on Netflix or something. In the case of work, I don't know. I don't have an explanation for it, but usually, distraction is just a form of turning away from what is, of not being present with what is. And we know that that causes suffering. And so when we see people, like you're talking about other people, and you notice it in them, we recognize that in ourselves, and we know that we suffer when we do that, and so we can have compassion for those people and realize that that's what they're doing. I think you said they're running away or something, or turning away. Yeah,
that's how it feels like. Yes.
Yeah, and that, that's what you feel. Maybe I don't know if they do, but in any case, that's painful to run away. In the immediate, it feels good. It's like, oof, getting away from this. But ultimately, there's something we know painful. We're running away from something that we don't like, that we don't want to see, that we don't want to feel. And actually, when we do face it, when we are one with it, there's huge relief. It's much easier. It's much easier to be with something than to run away from it, to not resist. You know, it's like the thing, the story I tell of some sorrow is novena. Allowing that sorrow to be without pushing it away or turning away from it is nirvana. There's no longer resistance. The simple ease of mourning then. You know.
Thank you.
Lisa has her hand up. Oh no, Joa. Okay.
Yeah. So someone raised their hands?
Lisa.
Oh, Lisa, you want to say something?
No, I was jokingly would ask, can you fully be with watching Netflix? At which point is a distraction not a distraction and you're fully into it?
Hmm. Well, you know, the response we usually give is, if you are completely distracted, you're no longer distracted. So if you're one with whatever you're doing, and, you know, we can give ourselves moments of Netflix and be completely one with it. And then when it's no longer, when there's something else to do, let go of it and do whatever else we need to do. That's what being one with is to just be one with everything according to the moment, the circumstance, whatever it is. Being one with being lonely, being sad. Enjoying Netflix, you know, whatever. So Joy, yeah, you want to say something?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't realize there were these little hands. There's Dale, Alberto, and Thiago.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share that I was getting stuck in the wanting to stay. I mean, I've been confined in this beautiful place facing the sea, and I realized last week how I just didn't want to come, I didn't want to go away, and I was getting stuck into into the idea that I wanted to stay in confinement where I was, the way I tried to deal with that is that I realized first that I was getting very attached to that place, very attached to that situation. And I started to make exercises of visualization to visualize the good things about Paris, the good things about my home, the good things about going home and what I would find there. Instead of cultivating resentment about, oh my God, I'm gonna have to leave this place and this is gonna be terrible to go back to Paris and the pollution and noise and in a different setting, trying to cultivate the good things about what might come, what I will find there. Trying to visualize that in order not to get stuck with my resentment about leaving this place.
Yeah, those are always good things. As soon as we find ourselves attached and look at it, yeah. So Dale.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about this idea of coming home to yourself when there is no self.
Mm-hmm. So this is a whole bag of worms, this notion of no self. It's almost like the self is not who we think it is. No, it's not just who we think it is, let's say. And that's what we come home to, is that realization that, you know, one of my favorite lines of poetry is Walt Whitman, which I stole and used in one of my poems. I contain multitudes, You do too. I'm saying we all do. And that's what we come home to, is this multitudes of selves. And we can be everything. We can be anything. That's what we come home to. When we talk about no self, we're talking about this absence of a fixed identity that never changes, which is an illusion. And that's what we need to let go of. And the no self is the no fixed self, actually. That's why when I say we have to leave behind everything that's familiar. And it's frightening. And we don't have to do it all at once. You know, we can take little steps. We do it every time we sit down on the cushion. You know, we let go of who we are in that 20 minutes. And then, of course, it comes back again. But we've let go of it, and the more we let go of it, the easier it becomes to let go of it. And we're not so attached anymore.
Mm-hmm. So can I say, so is it the same thing, like the idea of home would be the same thing? Like this homecoming, is that what you were saying about that? Okay.
Exactly. You come home to who you truly are, which is not who you think you are. It's not that fixed identity. And it's such a relief. You're not, you don't have to be, I didn't have to be who those people thought I was in high school, you know? Or who my parents thought I was, or whatever, who I thought I was ultimately.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Alberto.
Well, I'm writing what I want to say. I delete everything, so I'm gonna try my best. Changing, adapting. So just this, like you say so many times. Well, I'm thinking that there is nothing to worry about, yes. Is, how can I say, I can change anything. Things happens, so we try to be aware of that moment by moment. It's not easy. This pandemic situation and the changes who in our lives, in our habits. The difficulty to change, the resistance we have to these changings all the time. But each moment things are changing, just like that. And the health of my parents, the death of a friend of mine yesterday. So it's life. We can try to be aware of that, live with that, it's difficult, we don't want that, sadness, depression, preoccupation, well, it's just this, moment by moment, and there is moments I can see that, yes, I can see that it's just this, we have to face it. Be aware of it and live with it. And in that moment is like you are completely free of everything. You feel you are ready to do what is needed to do moment by moment. Is like you embracing yourself. I don't know if is the word.
Yep.
Like you in that moment you embracing yourself, and you say to you, okay, be aware of that, be with that. It's life. Well, I can explain better like this. I delete everything, so this changing, this pandemic, this 2 months in home, my parents' health, death, all that make me be aware of the impermanence, the changing of time, be aware of that many, many moments on, and help me too much to be with me, to be in home, like you said before, be home, be in that place that is possible, face it, everything with patience, with love. It is because in the last day of our retreat, I have this feeling of share with all of you that if there is a word to express this retreat, your presence all together, the word is, I feel that the word is love, just love. It's difficult to say in words. It's a profound experience, all of it. Yeah, thank you for your presence in my life, to be my companions in Dharma. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Alberto. Thank you. You said it in words. You said it. And you're right, I always say just this, but that's your name, just this too. So.
Yeah, my Dharma name is a good koan. Every day of my life. Yes. Thank you. Realize that.
What is your Dharma name?
Just this.
Thank you.
Thiago?
So, when you talked about coming in, coming home, it immediately reminded me of coming out. It's not a play with words, it's coming out of the closet, as we say. And it felt like that. It felt like taking a sheltering on in place. Mm-hmm. We say coming out, but in essence, we are coming in towards ourselves. And I don't know, it was very, very present when we were talking, like, yeah, I know that. and that was a very specific moment years ago. But it's the same thing each moment or each situation. It's not different. It's maybe less palpable or not so easier to put a frame around it. But it's the same thing. It's that feeling of being free, open. I was coming in, but it was like everything was possible. I mean, we talked about it. It was the time I took the vows. Jukai, and just like I could cross my legs again. or wear pink socks, whatever. It's just it's that sense of freedom. It was good. It was a good time.
It was, yeah. I remember. And your name also applies to.
Yeah, perfect way. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. And it's great, huh? Because it does. It fits perfectly, this notion of coming out. So we have time for one more. Seu.
I have some words that are all the time with me the last days. Today, especially, but all the time, are generic from a radio sender. And I asked João to traduce because I don't know. And João writes, "The more free we are, the more zigged we are." And these are always in my head, and I change the move. The more zigged we are, the more free we are. I have all the time the two frases. Como é que se diz frases?
The same, two translations?
Yeah, I have
sentences.
And the feeling that it's the same that the more free we are, the more zigged we are. See? The more...
see, like in war, surrounded, sieged.
Ah.
And it's... a radio program about refugees, and they start all the time with these words, and these words stay by me all the time. I don't know, it's perhaps not easy to understand.
So it's the more free we are,
the more free.
Yeah.
The more zigged we are. Zigged.
The more free we are, the more sieged we are, the more under siege we are, or?
Quand on, le plus libre qu'on est, mm-hmm. c'est le plus encerclé qu'on est.
Mm-hmm.
Et le contraire.
Mm-hmm.
Quand on est si encerclé, ce sont les deux.
On est vraiment libre.
C'est seulement pour dire que ça bouge pour moi tout le temps. Merci.
Merci. Well, thank you, everyone. I think we need to stop. We do the vows, right?
Mm-hmm.